Hello, everyone. Welcome to Financeology 101. Class is now in session. The information provided during this podcast is just that, information. You will need to do further research to address your specific situation. Enjoy the session.
Well, it's that time again. Gifted Generations presents Financeology 101. Welcome, everyone. My name is Robin Seegers, and my husband is Elroy. And we have a special guest today, April Russell. She is a loan officer, and she will be talking to us about buying and selling and refinancing homes because of this, the climate of the market now. It is booming. Things are happening. So this was the perfect time to invite April on and get her to explain things to us because it can get confusing. So welcome, April, and tell everybody about yourself.
Thank you so much, Robin, for that introduction. I am very excited to be here with you and Elroy this evening. To our listening audience, thank you so much for joining us. As Robin said, my name is April Russell. I am a mortgage loan officer currently with Movement Mortgage. I absolutely enjoy what I do. I've actually been in banking and finance since 2001. I've been strictly in the mortgage business since 2012. And again, I absolutely love what I do, and taking someone through this process from start to finish and them actually getting their keys in hand is one of the most gratifying experiences for me. I'm very much a teacher at heart, so I enjoy educating people about the process. I think there are so many nuances and different steps that people maybe are just not aware of. So I do appreciate you all having a platform like this to be able to get the information out to people for them to know, because this is definitely a great time to buy a house. It's just we need to make sure that we follow the proper steps in order to do so.
And that's why we have you on, because a lot of us do not even have a clear where to even start. So tell us, okay, with the housing market, the way it is right now, and I know you mentioned to me earlier that it's a seller's market. Explain that and then help the buyer understand what that means.
Okay, wonderful. So before I answer that question, I am going to give a quick disclaimer so that I can stay out of compliance jail, okay? So as I said, I'll say it
yes,
real fast.
Yes, because we can't come get you out.
You can't come get me out of jail, Elroy?
No.
Okay. So
we'll just call you for some information from jail.
Right. Okay. So I'm April Russell with Movement Mortgage, mortgage loan officer, NMLS ID number 886941. Movement Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender. While it's our goal to underwrite our loans in 6 hours, process them in 7 days, and close them in 1 day, extenuating circumstances may prevent us from being able to do so. All right. Now, let's jump right in.
Wow.
Seller's market. So what a seller's market means is that for those who currently own homes and are selling their homes, they are at the advantage and they have the advantage. What makes a seller's market is ultimately low inventory. So right now there are more buyers than there are sellers. So that is actually what makes it a seller's market, because there are less sellers than there are buyers right now. The opposite of that, of course, is what makes it a buyer's market is when there are more homes being sold and there are less buyers. So right now the market, because it is a seller market, it is a very competitive market. So if any of you have been logging online, you've been on, I don't know, Redfin, Realtor.com, Zillow, or wherever, you see a house hit the market, or even in your own neighborhoods, you see a house hit the market and it's sold literally sometimes within a day, 2 days, just because of the market. Right now, if a home stays on the market for longer than a week, it's almost as if, okay, is something wrong with that house? Where, of course, years ago, when it was a buyer's market, you might have a home that maybe stayed on the market for 30 days, and that was normal. But now, of course, because there are so many things happening in our area and so many great things happening in our area, as far as the growth here in the Triangle area as a whole, that is also driving up home prices. So while it may seem to some a bit discouraging, and there are reasons for that, and we'll talk about that momentarily as well. But so while it may seem a bit discouraging in a way to attempt to even enter this market because we know prices are going up, the flip side to that is there's a cost if you decide to wait. So saying I'm not buying now and you're going to wait a year or year and a half from now, that same house that you see today that's $300,000, it might be $375,000 next year. So this is really a great time to actually get into the market. And right here in the Triangle, just last week, we are the number two real estate market in the country. Not North Carolina. We are the number two real estate market in the country. We are called the Silicon Valley of the East. That is what our Triangle area is referred to as. Because of the IT companies that we have here, you know, we've got Apple, you've got Amazon rolling in. There are so many different things happening, so many companies moving here. And of course, they're moving their employees here, which of course creates more people, more schools, more stores, more shops, more houses, basically, and more demand for houses.
Wow, did not know that. That's crazy.
Silicon.
So that means you're going on. Yeah, so that means you're definitely busy with people buying and selling and all the transactions.
Yes, absolutely. And just to, I guess, give some numbers about myself, just because I don't want people to think, oh, they just got her to come because they know her. but like I said, I have been in the mortgage business since 2012. So last year in 2020, even during a pandemic, I will tell you, last year was the best year I've ever had in my career. During a pandemic, okay? And to put some perspective on that, I helped 89 families purchase homes last year for a total of about just under $22 million worth of real estate.
Wow.
So, and this year, in 2021 already, I'm already at 12 and a half. As of today, I'm at 12 and a half million. So actually on track to do more than what was done even last year. But also that speaks to what I was just referring to about the growth in this area. There is a demand for homes right now. Even builders, that building new construction is in high demand at this time. You've got new construction builders who have wait lists for their lots. People are literally saying, hey, when you get this permit, we want to be here. And they have wait lists of people hoping. And sometimes in some cases, they're having to do lottery drawings and literally pull from a lottery to see who will get the lots. It's definitely different. We've never seen this before. So we're all, you know, of course, navigating it as best that we can. But again, because it is a seller's market, that does not necessarily mean that this is not a great time to buy. It is still a great time to buy. And I tell anyone, especially my home buyer classes, if you are paying rent currently, and mind you, I am not knocking anyone who is renting right now. And for some, renting is the way to go. However, there are also some listeners on here tonight who are probably listening. They are renting and you no longer desire to do so. Because ultimately, if you are renting, you are paying a mortgage already. It's just not your mortgage. And we have to change our mindset of how we see. Because you see rent as a bill, and that's exactly what it is, because it does nothing for you. Your home and you becoming a homeowner, that's an investment. That is an asset for you to own a home. You're paying yourself. You're building equity for yourself and your family.
So if you're looking to buy a home right now, can you tell us, well, someone that's looking right now, how do they even start? I mean, how do you even start this process?
Right. Okay. So the very first step in the home buying process is to actually talk to a mortgage loan officer like myself and to get pre-approved for a mortgage. The reason why you need to be pre-approved first is because you don't want to go out here and start looking at homes and not know exactly what your budget is. So you don't need to go look at a $400,000 home and fall in love with it and then talk to me and I tell you your budget says $300,000. That's where your affordability is. Because now I'm the dream crusher, right? Or the dream killer. Right. I don't want to be the dream killer. So you need to know where you stand financially first, and then we can work from there. So with that pre-approval process, we're going to be discussing things like your income. We're going to talk about your debt. We're actually going to compare your income and your debt, and we formulate what's called a debt to income ratio, which is how we determine how much home is affordable for you. So we're going to be discussing that as well as discussing your credit. But one of the first questions I'll ask you when we have the conversation is, what does your budget say? What monthly payment are you comfortable paying each month for your mortgage payment? And the reason why that number is so important is because I don't want to put anyone in what I call a house poor situation, meaning I have now purchased this home. It was above my budget. So even though my lender said I could buy it, it's above my budget. I have picked up extra hours at my job to now pay for a home that I cannot enjoy because I'm working so much just to pay for it.
Wow.
And that's not living. So when we're looking at your income, we're actually looking at your gross income, which your gross income is before your taxes are taken out, before you pay for benefits on your job, before you contribute funds to your 401k or retirement account. So because our numbers are based off of that gross, 9 times out of 10, the number or amount of house or payment that I say is affordable for you is probably going to be higher than what you say you're comfortable with. And I like to go with what makes you comfortable, and then we can adjust from there. But you definitely want to get pre-approved first. And I know sometimes people can be nervous about opening up financially. You know, you've got to be transparent through this process. But I will tell you, just make sure you're working with a loan officer that, one, doesn't mind walking you through and holding your hand, doesn't mind educating you about the process, and make sure someone that you feel comfortable talking with. And literally, it's a conversation. That's what I tell any buyer. When we talk, it is strictly a conversation. We're going to talk about where you are. And the thing is, I've never told someone no for a mortgage before. I've never said no. I never will. There is a way to do it. So although the answer might not be yes today, I can get you to the yes. So we don't have, I don't have to tell you no at all, because there's a way to get there.
Okay. So quick question. What you said, a ratio, debt to ratio number, is that correct?
Debt to income.
Come. What is
debt
that?
Debt to income ratio, DTI. Okay. So what that is, we take your income. So ultimately, when you're looking at mortgage loans, the government basically says that they don't want your debts to be more than 43% of your actual income. And again, this is your gross income. So they don't want your debts to be more than 43% of your gross.
Okay.
So you take your gross income, your monthly gross income, multiply that by 43%. And that number that you get is what we call your debt threshold. That number is the total amount of debt that you can actually hold. But that includes your mortgage payment. That includes your car payment. That includes any credit card payments that you have, personal loans, or even student loans. And we'll talk about those in a second as well. But you're going to take that debt threshold number, subtract the current debts that you have, and then the remaining number tells you how much house payment is affordable for you.
Now, does part of this ratio include like your utility bills and things like that?
It does not. So we are only looking at items that are actually reporting on your credit report.
Okay.
A couple of items that do not report on your credit report that we will ask you about will be things like taxes. Are you on a monthly installment plan with the IRS for taxes? We still have to count that in your monthly debt. If you are obligated to pay any type of child support or alimony, although that may not appear on your credit report, we will still inquire to you about that particular type of liability, because we do have to include that in your debt ratio. But ultimately, we're referring to debts that appear on your credit report. So your car payment, any personal or installment loans you may have signed for, credit card payments, and again, student loans.
I have someone asking, how does student, oh, you just mentioned that student loans apply to this. Say that again.
Yes. So I'll actually tell you how we calculate or how it's calculated for student loans. So with student loans, and some of the listeners may have heard this before, you've heard someone say, oh, I want to buy a house, but I feel like my student loans are preventing me from doing so. So how student loans work is this. The guideline basically says that if anyone has their student loans in a deferred status or in a forbearance, meaning you are not currently making payments, generally we're required to count 1% of that student loan debt against your monthly debt ratio. So if you owe $50,000 in student loan debt, that is $500 per month that we count against your debt ratio. Now, there are ways around having to do that. So that's kind of the bad news of the student loan. However, there are options where we don't have to use that 1%. So an option would be to get on a payment plan with your student loans, and it's called an IBR or IDR. It's an income-based or income-driven repayment plan. So for those of you that have student loans currently, and if you're in a forbearance, and I've been hearing this a lot here lately as well, or I've heard it a lot over the past year. Oh, well, everybody's in a forbearance. The government put us in a forbearance. Yes, if you have student loan debt, the government put you in a forbearance. But guess what? Did you know that you don't have to accept that forbearance? You don't have to remain in a forbearance status just because it was offered to you. So what you can actually do is contact your student loan servicer and just ask them if, you don't have to go into repayment, but ask them if you were to get on an income-based repayment plan, what would your monthly payment be? And ultimately, you can use that calculation I gave you for your debt-to-income ratio and determine how much house you could afford based off of that income-based repayment. Because ultimately, that payment's going to be a lot lower than that $500 a month that I mentioned.
Okay.
So I definitely recommend that if you are in the forbearance or the deferment at this time, contact your servicer and ask them what the payment would be. Now, I said if and ask, okay? So don't get off of this podcast and say, that April girl from Movement Mortgage said, call and get on the payment plan. I did not say that, okay? I said, call and ask what your payment would be if you were on the repayment plan. Now, whether or not you get on the plan or not, you need to talk to a loan officer first, because I will tell you if you need the payment plan or not. Because for some people, and you have to remember, everyone's financial picture is different. We all have a different financial story. So it might be that you can afford us counting that 1% against you, where someone else might not be able to.
Okay.
It all depends on where you are. So that's why I said, if, don't get on the plan. You might not even need to be. You need to talk to a loan officer first.
Now, how does your credit score play into all of this?
Credit is so vitally important when it comes to purchasing a home, because ultimately your credit score and your credit report are telling us your story, or you're telling your financial story without us technically knowing you. You're almost telling us about your financial character. So the reason why the score is so important is because that helps with interest rate. It helps with the rates and terms that you may be offered. So even though, and I have loans that can go down to a 580 credit score. However, sometimes those are not the best options, and those are not the ultimate best terms for someone to take. Now, I will give you an example. I actually locked someone today who has a 589 credit score, and I locked them in at 3.75%, 30-year fixed. Now,
that
is historically low. However, if the score was higher, if they were at 660 or higher, I could have easily locked them at about 2.75. So they're still missing out by not having the higher score, even though technically 3.75 is not historically a bad interest rate, but it's definitely higher than what people are paying at this time. So as far as, I guess, magic numbers for credit scores, because I do get asked all the time, like, where does my credit score need to be? It really all depends on what we're looking for or what we're trying to do for you. So if I have to give you a magic number, I'm going to give you 640. The reason why you need your credit score at 640 or higher is because if you are seeking 100% financing or any type of down payment assistance, those are government programs, and those programs require your credit score to be 640. Mm-hmm. Now, there are three credit bureaus: Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. We use whatever score is in the middle. So we look at all three of those credit scores, and we use whatever score is in the middle. So ultimately, two of your three credit scores need to be at or above 640. And again, there are options below 640, but those options will require a down payment.
So question. I hear a lot of people, you know, when they're trying to get a home loan, they've been told, hey, you need to get your credit score up, so I need you to go out and get a secured credit card or stuff like that. I mean, I've heard that from a few people. What is the pros and cons in doing that? Or is there a way around it? Are they being misled by what they're hearing?
No. Overall, I will say no. They're not being misled by what they're hearing. So if you've had some derogatory issues with credit before in the past, and you, say, for example, have a lot of collections on your credit right now, and you're trying to figure out how can I rebuild, one of the first things anyone would tell you to do is to open a small secured credit card. And when I say small, I mean like a $300 limit, okay? We're not trying to go on a shopping spree here, okay? We're building credit. So you just need a small limit on the card, all right? And here's how we have all been misled with credit. So you've got to know how to play the credit game. And here's how we play the credit game. If you have a credit card, you are to use that credit card for something that you already have cash to pay for anyway. Right. But what we have been doing is we use our credit card and we don't have the cash to pay for it. We're just charging stuff that we can't pay for. Mm-hmm. And that's how we get in trouble. And that's how we end up paying all these high interest rates on these credit cards. Because making that little minimum $25 payment a month does not move the needle. No. At all, really, or not much by making just the minimum payment. So we have to know how to play the credit game. So yes, secured credit card. Let's go back to that example. Open a secured credit card, $300 credit limit. You don't want to charge any more than about $50 a month on that card. Now, what could be $50 a month? That could be gas in your car.
Right.
That could be your water bill. That could be your Netflix and Hulu subscriptions. I don't know. But my point is, you're going to use it for something that you were going to pay cash for anyway. Because the goal here is we're building credit. Like I said, this is not for shopping. We are building credit. So use the card for something you were going to pay cash for anyway. So let's just say it costs you $50 to fill up your car, your gas tank. You charge the $50 on your card. Next month, your bill comes. How much are you going to pay on that card? You owe $50. You're going to pay $45. And you're probably thinking, April, why would I only pay $45? And why wouldn't I pay off the card to zero? So here's why you don't pay the card to zero. The purpose of credit, and especially credit cards, if you look at your credit report, you will see that your credit card is listed as a revolving account. Revolving meaning it is supposed to constantly be moving. So you don't know when your credit card company is going to report your activity to the credit bureau. You don't know the exact date that will happen. So if you use your credit card and pay it to zero every single month, if it reports zero to the credit bureau, then guess what? It looks like you're not even using the credit that's been extended to you. So you won't see any movement with your credit because you're not using the credit.
Wow, did not know that.
Okay, so this approach is really good for when you're trying to actively to purchase a house, right?
This is a very good approach. Now, yeah, so but here's the thing. And like you were saying, Elroy, people have been told, oh, open a secure credit card if you're trying to build your credit. I don't want anybody to get off this podcast right now and go open a secured credit card until you talk to me first. Or a loan officer. It doesn't have to be me. Yeah, you need to talk to a loan officer. Talk to your, but I'm April Russell. Talk to April. Okay? Talk to me. Yeah,
don't talk to April. Talk to April.
You need to, but remember what I said. Everybody's financial picture is different. So while somebody might need to go open a secured credit card, someone else might need to just negotiate a couple of bad derogatory items that just hit their credit 2 months ago. And they might be okay. Right? So, because everybody's story is different. So you definitely want to talk to an expert and a professional first before you start making these moves. One of the worst things I've seen people do, and a lot of times we just do it for a lack of knowledge and we don't know, is around tax season, people will say, oh, I'm gonna get my tax refund and I'm gonna pay off everything on my credit and fix my credit. And what they end up seeing is that their credit score actually drops by doing so. Well, you, in your mind, you think you're doing a great thing because I had this derogatory collection account and now I paid it off. Well, you actually caused your credit score to drop because what if that collection was from 3 years ago? So if that collection was from 2018, now that you've paid it, when your credit report updates after in about 30 days after you pay it, it's going to show 2021, even though your collection has a zero balance. So you just dropped your credit score. So that's why you need to talk to a professional first, because there might be some derogatory items that I may very well tell you not to address. Leave it. Let's build. In some cases, it might be best to rebuild good credit to override the bad versus trying to just get rid of the bad.
But
you need to talk to an expert and a professional so that they can tell you what it is that you need to do, because we need to be strategic about your money.
Yeah. And this is why we're having people like you come on a podcast, because where Rob and I, we work on people's budgets. You are the professional of these kind of things that you specialize in. And we're always trying to point people to somebody like yourself. Look, hey, we can help you build the budget. But these kind of things, you're a professional. That's our disclaimer right there.
Wow.
So someone did ask a question. They said, go ahead, Rob, you can ask a question. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
If someone asks, does the 640 credit score apply if you own land to build on your property?
So if you currently own land and you want to build, meaning you're going to hire a builder, a contractor or a custom builder to build on your property, that 640 does not apply because you actually need a different type of mortgage loan. You actually need a construction loan. So the credit score requirement with a construction loan, and here's the thing, because of COVID, and you're gonna have to check with different lenders. I can tell you, I'll say another lender, I don't mind. But Truist, which is, I guess, BB&T, SunTrust combined now, they still offer construction to permanent loans. So that is what you would actually need if you're looking to build on land that you currently own. But when COVID hit last year, there were several lenders and banks that pulled out of, and I'll say several lenders and banks, including Movement Mortgage, that pulled out of offering construction to permanent loans. And the reason why lenders stopped offering them is because of the pandemic. You didn't know what was happening. So a construction loan is one of the most riskier loans that any lender can do. We're lending money on something that's not there. So because of COVID and the pandemic, the job you have today, God forbid, but what if you're laid off in those 9 months that this house needs to be built and we've already lent this money for your home to be built? So that's why a lot of banks and lenders ceased offering a construction to perm loan. But as I said to that particular listener, Truist does, that's the only one that I can recall at this time that still offers a construction to permanent loan. And I'm not exactly sure what their credit score requirement was. I can tell you when we offered it, our credit score requirement was 680. But unfortunately, we no longer offer them at this time just because of the risk.
Wow. And that goes for commercial stuff as well, right?
Right, it does. And then also to go back to that with building, if that owns the land, if you were to connect with a builder, if the builder is able to get the construction loan, then ultimately you could come to any lender, myself or a bank or whoever to seek your actual mortgage loan itself. But that's because the builder is going to get a construction loan and they are going to cover the cost of the construction. Right. So in that instance, you could still pursue a regular mortgage loan because you don't need the construction loan if the builder gets the construction loan. But that would be some research for you to do, finding that builder that will actually carry the construction.
Wow, because that's a risk for them as well.
It is.
Now I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. Refinancing. I had someone ask about that some time ago. How does that process work and what does it look like?
So I would definitely say now is a great time to refinance your mortgage. If you are listening right now and you have an interest rate of about 3.75 or higher, we should talk about your refinance opportunities. Just because rates are still low at this time. So with refinancing, we actually, although you may have minimal closing costs associated with it, and you do have closing costs again, but they're actually rolled into the loan. So your only out-of-pocket expense when you refinance your mortgage is to pay for your appraisal. And in some cases, you may even have where your appraisal is waived. So because right now of the high demand, there are certain systems with our loans now that if your credit score is at a certain place, say you've got a low loan to value or what they're thinking the value might be based off of your general area, it may be that your appraisal is actually waived. And so technically you don't really come out of pocket anything. Actually have a family that closed on a refinance today. And the beauty of refinancing as well is that one, you're going to get a refund of your current escrow account. But then two, you also skip a month. So they close today, July. Their first mortgage payment is due September 1. They don't have a mortgage payment for the month of August.
Okay.
So I would definitely say, again, if anyone on here has an interest rate of 3.75 or higher, it is definitely worth having a conversation about refinancing. And there are ways where you don't have to go back to a 30-year term. So if you say, I don't know, bought your house 2 years ago and you've got 28 years remaining, we can refinance and put you at 28 years if that's what you would prefer to do. There's 20-year options, 15, 10-year options. It's really all about determining what's going to work best for you, your budget, and your financial picture. But it's definitely worth a conversation. And even with refinancing, even if you're only going to be saving, say, for example, $150, $200 a month, well, while that doesn't seem like a lot, it adds up over time. So that's ultimately how we determine if it's really worth it for you to refinance, is that we're going to look at your total savings over time to tell you, okay. And ultimately, you'll be saving thousands of dollars by doing so.
Wow. Okay. All right. Because I didn't know that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Now I was going to say, too. And then also, we have people now that are refinancing again because rates are so low. They have equity in their home. So people are taking equity out of their homes at this time. They're doing cash out refinances. That might be for home improvements. That might be because they're going on vacation. It might be because they're paying their child's college tuition. Like, your opportunities are endless with home ownership. That's what I tell people all the time. Because you're paying yourself and you're building equity. And your home is an appreciating asset, meaning it will continue to gain value. So there's so many things you could do with the equity in your home. Some are consolidating their debt. So they just have one payment every month for all of their debt. There's so many things you could do with your equity if you have it.
So if you have first mortgage, what's they call when you take another loan out on your home?
A home equity line of credit?
How
does that get mortgage? A HELOC?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So that is also, of course, HELOC is home equity line of credit, HELOC. So ultimately, that is exactly what I was just referring to, where you're actually taking equity out of your home. Now, the difference between a cash out refinance and a home equity line of credit is just that. Your home equity is a line of credit, meaning you can use those funds that have been extended to you, pay them back, but those funds are still available to you to use again if you needed to. And that's generally over a 15-year term. If you do a cash out refinance, we will just take what your equity that you have and you just get it one check, one lump sum, boom, there's your money. And now you just have one mortgage payment. If you do the home equity line of credit, you still have your first mortgage, but you also now have this additional payment to that home equity line of credit as well. So you're technically making two payments. You're paying two different lenders or two banks. You're making two payments for the mortgage. But in some cases, the home equity line of credit is the way to go versus a cash out refinance. It really depends on what you're looking for in your financial picture, which of those two options would be best for you.
Okay. Okay. So it sounds like we're going to see April Russell.
Yeah, that's what Grace says. Yeah. The question someone is asking, can you use...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rob. You can ask it. Go ahead, babe. Go ahead, babe.
Oh, can you use the HELOC to pay off the mortgage and then have one payment?
Well, the answer to that's going to be no. And generally it's no, because the home equity is only to pull out the equity from the home. So it's not paying off the mortgage at all. Your line of credit that would be extended to you is not going to be enough to actually pay off your first mortgage.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Very interesting.
Wow.
Okay. Now, someone who does not have a mortgage payment, say their house is paid for, they could take out a home equity line of credit and have one payment.
Okay.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay.
So I guess you have seen before, let's say somebody had a house that was $500,000 and now they only owe $100,000 on the house. So when they want to do a line of credit, they can take out as much as the house is worth, right? Which means the house is worth, let's say, $500,000. Can they take that $500,000 line of credit to use that, even though they have a bigger payment, and then use it how they wish? I mean, I think that's the person asking.
Okay.
If I take that line of credit out, I can then pay off my home mortgage and then have that $500,000, you know, to pay off also. I mean, I know it's kind of a dumb way of doing it, but I use those big numbers to try to, you know, to show you how they were thinking.
Okay, so I'm going to use your exact example that you just gave. There's a 500 home that's worth $500,000 and you only owe $100, okay? So when you're looking at a home equity line of credit, a home equity line of credit is done at what is called 80% loan to value, meaning you can only draw out 80% of the value of the home for the home equity line of credit, which is why I was saying you can't technically pay the mortgage off. But let me kind of, well, in this example, technically you could. I don't know why someone would do that, but it's okay. I'm going to give you the example. So 80% loan to value on a $500,000 home ultimately means that $400,000 is the max. So if we subtract the $100,000 that is already owed, then you're now at $300,000 of equity that you could draw. If you were sticking to that 80% loan to value. Now, in this example, if the person only owes $100,000, technically you could take your home equity line money, pay off the $100,000, and now you have one mortgage payment. Technically, you could do that.
Yeah. That's.
However, yeah. I think that might be what they were asking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe,
that's why I use a big number versus a small number. Yeah. That's it.
Typically, have a scenario of this sort either. To do that with, meaning you got enough equity to actually make that happen.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Wow.
This has been eye-opening.
I got something else I want to ask you. So let's go back to when you first started talking. You said something that perked my ears up. You said you give classes. So one, I want you to talk about the classes you give, and two, how often do you give them so somebody who might want to attend those classes, because, you know, we know you and we know you give a great service. She also has Facebook postings all the time. I listen to every last one of them. Even though I'm not in the house market, I just like listening to you speak about those kind of things because I'm trying to gain my knowledge in that area. So can you speak on those two things, your classes and the intel on offer?
Absolutely. So first thing I'll say is follow me on Instagram @loansbyapril. definitely follow me if you're not currently following me. I generally post there for anything that I have upcoming. I generally try, and I say try, I think I've been doing pretty good with this, but I try to have at least one home buying class per month. In those classes, I generally partner with a real estate agent and offer the class. Now, mind you, of course, because of the pandemic, we've been doing everything by Zoom. I did do my first face-to-face home buying class a couple weeks ago. But generally, the seminars are either on a Thursday evening at 6 p.m. or they're on a Saturday morning at 10. The classes are generally maybe an hour, hour and a half tops. Definitely a firm believer in not taking up much of your time. And two, I don't want to overwhelm anyone with information because it can be a lot. And technically, this podcast tonight, I've pretty much given you a mini home buying class. So it can be a lot of information. But if you follow me on Instagram at Loans by April, I generally will post any upcoming events or anything that I have going on. Okay, and there's absolutely no cost at all. People have asked me, how much is it to go to your class? Or how much do I pay you for your services? You do not pay me for my services whatsoever. Everything that I offer to you, all of this information is absolutely free to you. I actually do not receive compensation unless you buy a home. So guess what I'm going to help you do? Buy a home. So that's why I tell people, I don't care where you stand with your credit right now. We still need to talk about that because I don't do this for the compensation. Like this is not for the faint at heart that you give information and talk to people and coach people, because we also know everyone doesn't do what they're, you know, what's suggested of them to do. So trust me, this is not for the faint at heart, and I don't just do this for the money. Okay. I do this because I'm passionate about it, but I said all that to say, because I am passionate about it, regardless of where you stand with your credit today, I want to help you get to that place so that you can purchase your home. Because like I said, that is the most gratifying feeling for me, to give you some steps and you follow them and we get your keys. And then at that point, that's when I'm compensated. So sometimes I'm giving out this information and helping someone that I may not even receive any compensation from for a year. But it's okay. It's not just about that. It's about the information. It's about, this is my way of giving back and giving that good, vital information that people can actually use. That is helping you. It's helping your family. It's changing the outlook of your family. It's your first step to building generational wealth. And I get to be a part of that. So for every client that trusts me with that process or trusts me to take them through this, I'm definitely very, very grateful and appreciative.
So you're talking about generational wealth. Well, we appreciate you. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about generational wealth. That's something that we really home in on. And I hope you have a website, because I would love to put a link to your IG page and information out on our, you know, Gifted Generations LLC website.
Yes.
Spread that information.
So my website is homewithapril.com.
Home with April. Okay. I like that.
Yep, homewithapril.com is my website. Follow me on IG at Loans by April. You can also text me. My number is 919-268-1878. I don't mind texting. All I ask is respect my time. please don't text me at 10 o'clock at night. Like, I don't do that. I might not reply. How about that? But that is my number. You can call, you can text. I generally ask people not to call me after 6 p.m., but you can text me after 6 p.m. and I will text you back. But I generally have the ringer off after 6 p.m. just because I'm a mom to three wonderful, pretty much grown children at this point, but I'm also a newlywed, so I would like to enjoy my family.
Amen. Yeah, amen. Now, April, I did mention in the description about selling homes. Do you do anything about selling homes, or you have information about that if somebody's trying to sell a home?
Yes. So, and here's the thing. The first step to buying a home is to get pre-approved. The first step to selling your home is to get pre-approved as well, especially if you're wanting to sell and buy another home. You need to make sure that your finances are in place for you to be able to do so. So definitely don't go put your house on the market because, hey, I'm going to make a lot of money. you probably will make a lot of money in this market selling your home. However, you need to have somewhere to go, right? So you need to make sure that you get pre-approved first and talk with a loan officer about your finances so that you can make the right move for yourself. But is this a great time to sell? It absolutely is. It's a great time to sell just because, and also a great time to buy because, one, selling, again, you can make a lot of money. So about 60% or more of homes that actually sold in this area last month all sold above their asking price.
Wow.
So let's just say your house is listed for $500,000. It is likely that at minimum you will get $525,000. You might get more.
Wow.
And you'll get over what you're asking for. And you'll very much have multiple offers and pretty much have on the buyer side of basically what we call a bidding war. But that's because of the shortage. There's not enough inventory of homes. So the moment a home hits the market, that's why it goes so quickly. You even have homes right now that can get listed coming soon. And literally they're sold sight unseen before they hit the market, really.
Just because
of the demand. So, but again, I say to that seller, while those are all the positives of selling, yes, you could sell. Yes, you could make a lot of money. And the rates are still low. But again, and the reason why some people are hesitant to sell right now is because of the shortage. Think about it. Robin and Elroy, if you sold your home right now, where would you go?
Live in a car.
Ava's house.
No, you're not calling Ava's out. But you know I love y'all, but come on now. That's how you lose friends. Me and let them lose. Anyway.
You know what, April? We actually discussed this last night with some friends. They're like, y'all can move with us for a little bit, sell out a house. Come on, pay half our rent. We was like,
Yeah,
we had that conversation last night.
But yeah, so I mean, there are some advantages to selling, but that's also the hesitancy for some people who are not selling right now because they don't know where they would go. Now, the beauty of this market as a seller is that you have the advantage. So sellers are even getting leasebacks right now, meaning they are selling their homes right now, and technically they might be building a new home. They're leasing back their home that they're selling and saying, hey, I'll sell you my home, but let me stay in it for 6 to 8 more months. I'll lease it back from you now that you're the new owner until my new home is built.
Wow.
And depending on the position of that buyer, some of those buyers are saying, okay, fine. It's delayed gratification. I love your home, but I'll wait 8 months to move in if you need to stay. You're going to do a lease back, basically, and pay my mortgage anyway. So it all depends. I mean, as a seller, you're definitely at the advantage right now. But again, you need to have the correct strategy in place. Where are you going to go if you do sell? And are you financially stable enough to actually make that move? Where are you with your credit? I actually spoke with a young lady last week, and I think she was shocked to hear how low her credit score was, even though she owned a home. She was going to be listing her house last Friday, and I had to tell her, do not put your house on the market. You cannot buy another home at this time. Mm. Because her credit just simply wasn't where it needed to be in order to do so.
Wow.
So you definitely, again, it's the first step is the same whether you buy or sell. Get pre-approved. Talk to a loan officer first.
Wow.
Wow. Never even thought about that. That she had to figure out where else to go. If your credit not good, you can't go anywhere. Wow.
You can't get an apartment. You know, right? Because apartment.
It's difficult to rent as well because they're checking. And that's the thing, too, even with this market right now with rentals. I mean, some rental companies are calling for highest and best with offers for rent at this time. So it's I hate to say the market is brutal. But if you're looking to buy, you want to make sure that you, one, connect with the right loan officer that's going to ride this thing out with you. But even more importantly, you need to connect with the right realtor. You need to connect with the right real estate agent that is going to ride out this market with you, that doesn't mind that you're going to have to put in multiple offers on several different homes until you all land that one. Because it is very likely that the very first home you see will not be the home you will get.
Wow. Wow. That's a rough market. That's an absolutely rough market.
It's tough, but I tell anybody, jump in. Get in it. Now is the time. The rates are low. It is time for you to get in the market. It is time for you to stop renting. Now, I have had some buyers where I've had to tell them, okay, maybe it is best for you to renew your lease for another 12 months, but here's our game plan so that a year from now, we're not renewing that lease again because we're going to follow these steps to make sure that you're in a position to buy.
So let me ask you a question. What about someone who's been on bankruptcy and they're in bankruptcy repayment and they currently have a house and they might want to sell it? How do they go about, you know, getting the agreement to sell a house and working on their credit in order to get another place to stay? Have you ever encountered anything like that?
Right. So for someone, I'll talk about being out of bankruptcy and in it. Let's go to in it first. If you are currently in a bankruptcy and you have been in that bankruptcy for 2 years and you have made those payments on time, you're going to have to get permission from the bankruptcy court or from your, I guess they call them the trustee. You'll have to get permission in order to purchase another home. So say, for example, if you wanted to sell your home and purchase another, you would have to get permission from the bankruptcy courts in order to do so. But that is an option where you could purchase as long as they will allow it. I actually have a gentleman right now that I'm assisting. He's actually a veteran and he is in an active bankruptcy at this time. However, he has been cleared and given permission that he can purchase again. So I actually just pre-approved him about 2 weeks ago and he's out in the market now looking for a home. So that it can be done if you're in an active bankruptcy. If your bankruptcy has been discharged, generally, you need to be discharged for 2 years in order to pursue a mortgage loan.
Okay.
Wow.
And during that 2 year time, you need to make sure that you reestablish your credit. It is so vitally important that you do that. So if you went through a bankruptcy and you pretty much put every single debt that you have in that bankruptcy, that's where that secured credit card comes in. And I would probably tell you to at minimum get two. Because you've got to rebuild your credit.
Wow.
But remember, it's not for a shopping spree. We're building credit. So if you got to get two cards, one can be for gas and the other one can be for Netflix and Hulu and Apple TV and everything else. Right? But it's not a shopping spree. We're using the credit card for things that we have cash to pay for anyway. Things that we already pay for.
Wow. This was very enlightening. We truly appreciate you. This was awesome. This was definitely a lot of information that we needed to hear because there was a lot of things I was not even aware of. So,
wow. Well, I appreciate
Thank you,
so you much. All for having me on. And if it's okay, I'm going to share my contact information with everyone one more time just to make sure they have it. So,
share on, girl.
At
share
Loans on. By April. At Loans by April on Instagram. My website is homewithapril.com and my phone number, 919-268-1878. And I look forward to hearing from every listener on here.
Wow. Right.
And remember, your financial picture is not the same as everybody else's. So what works for your mom or work for your sister or your brother, your story might not be the same. That's why you need to talk to a loan officer.
Yeah, not to your friend in the barbershop trying to give you advice.
Right, and that's great. We appreciate our friends. However, you need to talk to an expert, okay? Someone that's licensed, okay? I'm licensed to do this, all right? I have to take tests and hours of classes and have my credit run every year. Like, I can't be on here telling you all about your credit and mine is jacked up. That doesn't work, you know?
So, right.
Sure doesn't. That's it. Talk about it. So let me give you our information. Robert and myself, we are Gifted Generations. We have an IG account, Instagram account also. It is gift.gen. We also have a Facebook page. It is Gifted Gen LLC. And on YouTube, if you just do a search for Gifted Generations, you can see several of our videos out there for the app that we have called Bags of Money, and also all these presentations and speeches and stuff, instrumental, instructional videos about the apps out there also. We also have our own website. It is giftedgenerations-llc.com. And as always, don't forget that dash. So last but not least, but the greatest, you guys know we're doing this podcast. We reach out to different people in different areas of expertise. And we also have an app. It is called Bags of Money. And I'm going to give you a brief explanation what the app is about. It is a budgeting app. One of the nice things about the app, once you put your income in, you know, you can do your frequencies, how often it is going to automatically update it for you each and every time per frequency. Same thing for expenses. The nice thing about this app, it can project your checking balance on any given day. So let's say you get everything in the app and everything is posted. And today is July 26th and your balance is $1,200. And you want to see what your balance may be a month from now, August 26th. You click on August 26th, it's going to tell you this is what your balance is going to be based on your current income and expenses. As you add more income, add more expenses, that balance is going to change. And it's going to reflect it and update it for every single day throughout the app. So the app helps you to see the future before you even know the money is even in your account, as long as it's accurate. And you can change anything about it on any given day. Just because you put in a question someone asked me yesterday in church was like, hey, I get paid every week, but the amount changes, but basically I get paid $65 every week, right? It's a part-time job. So she put in $65 in the app every week. And every time she gets paid, she updates that payment on that day. But she at least knows the base figure that she's going to get paid every week. So next week she gets paid $75. She click on next week, change that thing to $75, and it updates it automatically. So now she has a good figure, a good round figure as far as figuring what is my balance going to be on any given day. It's a great app. It's out on Android right now. We are still under development in iOS. The Apple phone is coming. We're working hard at it. So just hang in there. It's going to be available as soon as it's released. We're going to give it out to you guys. So there you go. Robin, back to you.
Well, April, thank you for joining us. Everyone listening, please contact Miss April because she's going to walk you through it. She's going to walk you through beginning to the end. And you're in good hands with her.
Yes.
And
she's passionate.
You can tell she's passionate. She's well-informed. And she will work hard for you. But, y'all, don't be calling her after 6 o'clock. And I'm going to put this on there. Yeah. Don't call her before 10 a.m. in the morning. And don't call her after 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock in the evening. You can text her after 6 p.m. Do not call her. Thanks, April.
With three kids.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you all so much for having me. This was a lot of fun, and I appreciate
you all so much. Thanks, April.
We appreciate you, April. And thanks a lot.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Take care.
Well, thank you for tuning in to our podcast, Financeology 101. I hope you enjoyed this session and the information provided will assist you on your financial journey. Until next time, be financially engaged.